For I am about to create new heavens and a new earth, says God through the lips of the prophet Isaiah. It's a long time coming, isn't it? A few weeks ago, in a town not very far from here, a father opened his heart to people who thought they knew him. This father holds an important job, and you might find his wife teaching in a classroom here at Harvard when she's not in the hospital or conducting research at Tufts. They're not expressly political, and the town they live in is a stable, wealthy, largely white one. In a church basement on a Sunday in December, this father described the moment he looked up at the TV and saw his son looking back at him in the face of Trayvon Martin. This man has two sons. One is now at the stage of thinking about college and next steps. And as these boys' father watched the news that night last February, his mind kept flipping. Trayvon's face and that of his own boys, their hoodies pulled up as they came home from school. In a room where you could hear a pin drop, the father told his white church friends something they had never heard, and something every black family has experienced or can identify with. He talked about what it's like being a parent of a child whose skin happens to be black. He talked about the conversation he and his wife had had with the boys about the police. Remember, they told them, if a police officer stops you, you can die right there. It's kind of like the lessons I learned about hiking in the woods. If you hear a rattle, stop. Don't move. Slowly back away. If the snake bites you, make a tourniquet. Make an incision at the bite mark. Suck out the poison. Be prepared. This is a life-threatening moment. Not scared, but prepared. For many of our black children, such moments can occur when you're walking back home from the grocery store. This father spoke about he and his wife talking with their eldest son about college. I've had that experience. It's not easy, a bit of a tense time at home. Yet I never had to tell my son or daughters, I'm sorry, but you can't go to a school in a state with a stand-your-ground law. That's non-negotiable. I love you too much, and the risk is too high. After this father finished sharing with our adult education class, minister of that church and other friends went up to him to learn more about the world he and his family occupy right in their midst. They learned how teachers and aides often stop the boys in school hallways to tell them to hurry. The Metco bus is leaving. That's the Metropolitan Council for Educational Opportunities, which buses in urban kids of color to largely white suburban towns. We have a long way to go to move beyond our assumptions about each other. Our stereotypes. A long way to go to name the privilege that allows parents like me to take my children's safety for granted, even if it's an illusion, and to create the beloved community that was part of Dr. Martin Luther King's dream. There is much unfinished work. I first encountered Jonathan Daniels when I started my job at Episcopal Divinity School a year ago this month. I had never heard of this New Hampshire native who, as a seminarian, answered the call of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and traveled with a handful of fellow students down to Selma, Alabama, to support efforts to register black voters. He and fellow student Judith Upham felt uncomfortable returning to Cambridge when the historic crossing of the Edmund Pettus Bridge was complete. They realized that most of the white protesters were returning to their homes and towns, leaving black families to experience alone the backlash and the day-to-day front lines of racial prejudice of 1965 Alabama. Jonathan and Judith went back to their seminary, now Episcopal Divinity School, and spoke to their academic supervisors. They managed to win approval to return to Selma and to live and work, pledging that they would complete their studies and return to Cambridge to write their exams at the end of the term. Jonathan and Judith lived with Alice and Lonzie West and their children and other black families who courageously welcomed them into their homes at the risk of their own jobs, homes, and even lives. Jonathan Daniels was killed in Alabama in August 1965 by a shotgun blast to the chest. He stepped between a gun and another civil rights activist, teenaged Ruby Sales, having just been released from a week in the county jail along with other young, committed protesters. Jonathan Daniels' heroism and his commitment to civil rights action has earned him honors. He's one of 15 modern-day martyrs recognized by the Episcopal Church, and his sculpture will soon be part of the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. He is one of only two Americans listed in the Chapel of Martyrs in England's Canterbury Cathedral. Two movies, a symphony, three books, uncounted chapters, articles and sermons, various scholarships, awards, memorials, and works of art commemorate his life and tell something of his story. However deserving these memorials may be, they can distance us from the 26-year-old who said yes to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s call to come to Selma. His seminary classmates reminded me that he was not a stereotypical hero. Classmate Robert Edson described him as a gentle, rather effeminate and cerebral young man. He was an unlikely martyr. Yet as I watched a parade of civil rights martyrs honored as part of the Jonathan Daniels and All Martyrs Pilgrimage in Hayneville, Alabama last August, I realized most of the martyrs of the civil rights movement were simply ordinary people. Jimmie Lee Jackson, Viola Liuzzo, Lamar Smith. They weren't very different from you or me. What set them apart, perhaps, was their stubborn belief that we can do better than this. They simply insisted, perhaps with disquieting intensity, that respect, dignity, and access to our constitutional rights is something we all deserve. Luke's gospel, which we heard this morning, reminds us Don't lose heart. The poor widow had no power in her society at that time. When she went up to that judge again and again, all she had was her persistence, her stubborn faith, her determination that she would be heard, even by a corrupt judge. Isn't that what faith is? To know that despite all appearances, God is using us to bring into being a new heaven and a new earth. The prophet tells us they shall not labor in vain. The civil rights era is past, but the challenges remain. The school-to-prison pipeline, the unfair wages that keep so many in poverty. And there are new heroes among us. In Florida, the Dream Defenders have vowed to change the Stand Your Ground legislation that cost Trayvon Martin his life. United We Dream is a youth-led movement that speaks out with courage about the rights of migrants and their families. Humane Borders organizes volunteers to leave food and water in the desert border areas of Arizona, taking action to spare the hundreds of lives which are lost in that desert every year. Do not lose heart. We are Easter people, and God has promised us we shall not labor in vain. Thanks be to God.